Now we're going to discuss a parsha in Halacha, which begins with, which was first probably clearly explained or formulated by the Beis Halevi in a conversation that he had with his children, and that was then further confirmed or really delivered to us by a conversation that the Brisker Rav had with one of his children. And that became a sort of a principle in the way that some certain areas of Halacha are governed. And that conversation, as we know it, became the basis for a very important shir presentation, a public shir, which the Rav gave. But the story of this area of Halacha, of when Mesorah itself, when the transmission of a halacha from one generation to the other generation, and the ability to transmit it is part of the halacha consideration, takes us back to the battle which the Ritziner Rebbe had of Leiner, the Gershon Henoch Leiner, back in the late 1800s. And Rav Gershon Henoch Leiner was a genius. He was a genius already, well known. He was very, very young. He already had written Svarim at a very young age. And one of the first Svarim that he wrote, which I believe was still in his 20s, was collecting all of the relevant Gemaras to the Mishnayos in Taras that didn't have a Talmud Bavli attached to each Mishnah. He put it together, he presented it. In fact, one of the people that he presented it to was the Shoyul Meshiv, who was the preeminent Posek at that time. And the story is told that when he came to the town of the Shoyul Meshiv, he was a very young man, he was not the Rebbe yet, the son of the Rebbe. And he comes to the shul, and in the shul, it was Mincha Marav time, and between Mincha and Marav, the son of the Shoyul Meshiv was discussing a halacha, discussing a shaila, and the young, soon-to-be Ritziner Rebbe, Rav Gershon Henoch Leiner, was able to insert himself into that conversation and knew the material so precisely that in modern terms, the son of the Shoyul Meshiv was blown away. And he said, B'dira chasidisher, B'dira chasid, because he didn't expect that a chasid would have such a wealth of knowledge and so well understood and so well thought out. And the young man, Rav Gershon Henoch, asked if he could meet the father, the Shoyul Meshiv, Shol Nutanzen, and the son was very excited to bring this great Talmud Chacham to meet his father, and he came to the home of Yosef Shol Nutanzen. So Shol Meshiv apologized that he was in the middle of an issue he was dealing with, and Gershon Henoch graciously waited. And after a short time, so then the Shol Meshiv completed his conversation, apologized for keeping this young man waiting, and then explained to him what he was dealing with. And Gershon Henoch said that he was just discussing that issue with his father before he left Rizin, and he shared with Shoyul Meshiv their conversation. And the Shoyul Meshiv again was so impressed with this young Eli, which he had in front of him, that he invited him in. They had dinner together. And nevertheless, those who are detractors of the Rav Gershon Henoch criticized him for accused him of wanting to sort of plagiarize a Gemara. That was the first battle of his life. The second, the very famous battle of his life and struggle of his life came many, many years later when Rav Gershon Henoch was, I believe he was already in his late 30s, I believe, maybe older. He lived a short life. He was nifter, I think, when he was in his early 50s, in the early 1890s. And then Rabbi Geshen Henoch had this idea that he would be able to figure out what the chilozin is. And he heard that there is an aquarium in Naples in Italy. And from what I've read, it's an aquarium that's built into the Mediterranean. And you can sit in the aquarium, you can actually see the sea life right in front of you. And there he spent days and days and days watching various sea life. And he was looking for a certain inkfish, a certain kind of squid that was able to discharge this something that could create bluish ink. And he believed he discovered it, and he was able to catch it, and he brought enough of the discharge back to Rinzin to create a makeshift lab, and then to introduce the various chemicals that were necessary. The Rambam says that you do introduce chemicals, and to create chemicals that would give it a certain staying power, and that would give it durability, and it would allow to withstand the heat of the process, and he produced what became the Rinzin Tchelas. The Rinzin Tchelas was at that time immediately was taken on by tens of thousands of Hasidim, because Rinzin was a very big Hasidus, and at that time it was the only Tchelas that had been put forth. It wasn't until, I believe, the 1900s. That Rav Herzig challenged. The Rav Herzig was very well educated in aquarium life and marine life biology, and marine life zoology. And there, from what I've read and been given to understand, Rav Herzig disqualified the Rinzin Tchelas because when he used all of the various chemicals that the Rinziner used to produce the Tchelas and left out the discharge of the inkfish, he also got a bluish color. And that's what he described to me. So Herzog went on to discover a different source of chilozon, and that became the basis for the present discussion of chilozon. Now, the Rav Geshen Henoch was a man who was willing to take on battles, and he clipped that we say every day in davening, Osa Chadosho is Baal Milchomos. Kodesh Baruch Hu creates new things every day, Baal Milchomos. Exactly what that means in davening, I have to understand. But he equipped that if a person wants to do Chadoshos, if he wants to create, if he wants to generate new ideas or revive ideas, if he wants to bring new ideas to the establishment, then he's going to have to be ready for Baal Milchomos. That's an interesting insight, and certainly makes us think about what we're describing about the Rabbonu Shalom in our davening. However, the response to the Rinziner is what is important to us this evening, and that is that there are numerous responses, but I want to focus on the response of the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi was also a genius. From his very young years, the Beis HaLevi's was the great grandson of Chaim Volozhiner, the great grandfather of the Rav of Soloveitchik. And the Beis HaLevi was at first a candidate and ultimately became at a point in his life the Rosh Hashiva, the co Rosh Hashiva of Volozhiner together with the Netziv. And later on, there was a parting of ways. And the Beis HaLevi then went to Warsaw. He lived in great poverty in Warsaw. And which one of the Gedolim at that time thought that it was a terrible loss for Klal Yisrael. And when the town of Brisk became an open position because Maril Diskin made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, so then the Beis HaLevi was first at Rav Slutsk, after Volozhiner, Rav Slutsk, because it was a large city. But he suffered a lot because of the battles of the Maskilim and ultimately had to leave Slutsk and then Warsaw, and then he became the Rav at Brisk, where his family then became that which made Brisk very, very famous. So now the Beis HaLevi was opposed to the Tcheles of the Ritziner. And the Ritziner publishes in a sefer the criticism of the Beis HaLevi, the letter of the Beis HaLevi. And there, the Beis HaLevi writes in this letter that if the Ritziner would have discovered a fish that was unknown to us, a fish that was not available to us, not easily accessible, he would have discovered a discharge of a fish that wasn't known to people, so then we would have to take his discovery and his insight very seriously. However, since the fish had always been around and the ability to access this bluish discharge was always available, and the chemicals that he used to shape the chelas from the alleged chilazon was always around. So therefore, the Beis HaLevi argued that we have a counter mesora, a counter tradition to the Ritziner, because he would argue that's what you have in the first entry over here. He says, that being the case, we have a counter mesora that this is not the chilazon, that this is not the tcheles. But if you can explain to us that a reason why people would not be aware of this fish and why people would not be aware of the ability to make it, so then we would have to, then what you have to say would be of import and would be something we have to discuss and contend with. In the recent iteration of Tcheles, so this letter is taken very seriously, and much of the arguments in favor of the recent discovery of Tcheles explain why would it be that the information, that the knowledge was, we no longer have it, and therefore they believe that they have satisfied the criticism of the Beis HaLevi. However, that's not the words of the Beis HaLevi, which is transmitted through the family. And we have several different records. We have the records of how the Rav explained it and the records of how the Brisker Rav explained it. So let's just walk down that for a moment. We first come, it's in our community, so to speak, aware of the Mesorah of the Beis HaLevi with regard to Tcheles, from an entry that Rav Shechter wrote in the Nefesh HaRav. And there he writes that we don't have the ability to revive a tradition, a Mesorah, through proofs, through chochos, technios, to various different kinds, scientific information. Once something is relegated to a mesora, to a tradition, so it can only be maintained through a tradition. So what the chilazon was handed over from generation to generation. Now we lost the information, the chilazon. So the Beis HaLevi, as this tradition indicates, as the Rav explained in the name of the Beis HaLevi, can only come back through a tradition, through a mesora. It cannot come back through any other, even if we were to identify with certainty that we have the chilazon, and we are to identify with certainty that this tcheles is the tcheles that was known of old. So the Rav explained, the Beis HaLevi says, but that's not good enough, because something that has to be transmitted through a tradition has to remain transmitted through tradition. And if it's not transmitted from generation to generation, so then it can never enter back into the Mesorah until Yemos HaMashiach Elyon David re-establishes it. Rav Shechter, in the footnotes of the Nefesh HaRav, points out that he would have two possible criticisms of this particular Gemara, both of great interest. One critique would come from the Rishonim, who discuss that there was, and you have it in source number Vav, that the Beis Yosef writes that the Mordechai found, was became aware that there was this box of Kisvei HaKodesh that contained tefillin, and this box was found near the Kever of Yechezkel, and this box had the Seder of Parshas of Rashi. So that means that going back to the time of the Nevi'im, the mainstream approach of how the Parshos and the tefillin are ordered, like Rashi, now we have tefillin that goes back to the time of Yechezkel. So that should seem to be a clear disqualification, a disenfranchising of the Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. Now, there are Svarim that pushed back, either Rabbeinu Tam, his Talmidim, he said, how do you know that the box of Tefillin by a Beis HaKvaros are the kosher Tefillin? Maybe those were the Tefillin that were not kosher, and the Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin were the ones that he was wearing, which is a very important comment when it comes to any archaeological discovery that becomes hard to verify. And to, however, the Rav Shechter points out that the Beis Yosef certainly assumed, and even in the criticism of the Talmidim Rabbeinu Tam, assumed that would we know that these tefillin are the tefillin that were in fact used, so we could use it to establish a halacha. Now, there is a similar Gemara in concept. Gemara has, when it comes to tzitzis, Gemara in Bava Basra says that there was a tour guide, but Rav pointed out it was just a tour guide, a taya, when it comes to the Svarim HaKadoshim, refers to a great Talmid Chacham, who was aware of where the Mesei Midbar were. The Gemara says that he was willing to show people, he thought this, there was still some Mesei Midbar, great Tzaddikim, so it stands to reason that the Mesei Midbar would still be there and that their bodies would be unimpacted. Dor Deya. So he said, I can take you, I can show you there. I can show you where they are. So he takes somebody to see the Mesei Midbar, and he sees their tzitzis, and he's able to snip their tzitzis without touching the mace. And he snips off the corner of their tzitzis, and he wants to take it back home with him. And the horse doesn't budge, doesn't move. So the people around tell him there is a mesorah in our area that whenever anybody tries to pirate something away from that those mesim, the horse doesn't move, doesn't go anyplace. You will not get any place with this. You must have taken something from the mesim in. All right? So he realizes, he puts the tzitzis back, gets back in his horse, horse is ready to roll, and he goes home. And he goes to the Beis HaMedrash and tells the story. So the Gemara says that the Rabbanan in the Beis HaMedrash said that how could you not have counted the number of strings? You had the tzitzis in your hand. Machloikis Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. Three strings, four strings, six strings, eight strings. How could you not count? Get a chance to explain to us, to give us a hayirah. So Rav Shechter points out, you see from that Gemara, that we are willing to reestablish a Masorah based on information that we find, even though it's not handed down from generation to generation. Now, one could argue that these two examples do not run contrary to the Beis Halevi, because one could argue that in these two examples, we would be establishing a Masorah. It just would not be handed to me from my father, but from my great-great-great-grandfather, but he's still handing it to me. But I think there's another way of appreciating what the Beis HaLevi said. And that is in the Rav's writings and comes from a story that's in the Sefer called the Uvdois Van Hogois LeBeis Bris, written by a very fine Talmid Chacham, Shlomo Miller. He comes to our neighborhood once a year, twice a year, to raise money for his kollelim. And he has, over the course of many years now, he's a very, very elegant pen. He writes beautifully, and he's been able to record the wisdom of Brisk, whether it's on Chumash, on the Haggadah, and this is the various practices of the Chachmei Brisk. When I say Chachmei Brisk, I mean the Soloveitchik family. So here he writes that the Brisker Rav from Belleville was in the town of, I think, Krinitz, must be in a resort town, and he was with his son, Rav Beryl, and Rav Beryl must have been a very young man then, and they, I guess, were maybe the spas of Krinitz, I'm not sure, but a Rezinner Chassid came over to the Brisker Rav and asked him whether he would take Rezinner Tchelas. And the Rezinner Chassid said, I will give you a pair of tefillin, a pair of tzitzis, a bag with tchelas. The Brisker Rav didn't accept, and he thanked him. And after that, the Beryl asked his father, he said, why didn't you take the tzitzis? What do you have to lose? They put on tzitzis, you put on tchelas. You know, Suffolk, maybe it's the right tchelas. The Brisker Rav said that the Beis Halevi explained that it's not a question of whether this chelas is correct or not. He explained that there are parshas in the Torah that are governed by Sha'al Avicha Miyageincha. And there are parts of Torah that are governed by Zikeinecha V'yoymrulach. The parts of Torah that are governed by Sha'al Avicha V'yageincha, so they are, they're part of the give and take of Torah. But the parts of Torah that are Zikeinecha V'yoymrulach, they are part of a Mesorah, and that Mesorah becomes something that, we'll look at the language over here, because it becomes so much clearer. Loimar shor, shu shor, homer b'torah, afil yeshmei kol ha-simonim. He says that person wants to know what a shor is. He wants to bring a korban. So he has to know what a shor is. So he only can determine what a shor is because his father told him this is a shor. Because the previous generation says this is a shor, because people call it a shor. Otherwise, he can't tell that he doesn't know it's a shor. He could read all the books in the world that say, if you see an animal that looks like this, then you know it's a shor. So that would not determine for halachic purpose that it's a shor. So the Beis Halevi said the same thing is true when it comes to the chilozin and tchelas. If a previous generation is willing to say, this is chilozin, this is tchelas, all right, then it has the status of chilozin and tchelas. Otherwise, this doesn't have the status. Now, the Rav further explained in a magnificent shir that, again, it's a four-hour shir. We're just going to cull just a few moments of that shir, where the Rav explained that within halacha, there are two kinds of mesorah. The shal avicha v'yageidcha mesorah and the zekeinecha v'yomelcha mesorah. And the Rav, when he explained that there were these two kinds of mesorah, so the Rav explained that if you look at Hilchos Rambam of the Beis Din, and Beis Din has two ways of transmitting information. One way of transmitting the halacha, I should say. One way of transmitting the halacha is that the Beis Din can establish certain gezeros and to protect the Divrei Torah. And a gezeira that's there to protect halacha b'nei raisa, so that gezeira is cannot be unhinged. Once it gets accepted, Klal Yisrael is doing it, so then it cannot be reevaluated. On the other hand, if Chazal are interpreting a pasuk, and they're interpreting the pasuk based on one of the midos that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us to interpret psukim, or through any svar that they're using to interpret. So then the next generation is able to debate, the next Beis Din gets to reevaluate. If a Beis Din makes a new takana and the takana gets established, then we require a Beis Din of greater stature, but a Beis Din of greater stature gets to reevaluate. So the Rav said, you see from the functioning of a Beis Din that the establishments of a Beis Din run two tracks. There is the track that gets reevaluated and the track that is here to stay once a Beis Din establishes it. the track that gets reevaluated sometimes requires a more powerful basin, sometimes a lesser. It doesn't require that. So Rav explained that there's part of our Mesorah which is Sha'ala V'icha V'icha. Sha'ala V'icha means it's a conversation. Sha'ala V'icha means you're asking. It means that when one generation transmits the next generation, it's done with the Masa Umatan of Halacha. It's with the give and take. It's with the we have to explain and defend. And when the next generation accepts, then that becomes, or when the next Bezin accepts, that becomes the transmission of those particular halachas through Sha'al Amicha V'yageidcha. And if when the next generation pushes back, that's part of the Masumatan, and then that will determine whether it has its place in halacha or not, whether it'll make it to Shulchan Aruch or not. There's another Mesorah where Bezin makes a particular din, and then it becomes part of the Mesorah, and it does not become part of the Sha'al V'yageidcha. It's simply Zekeinecha V'yayimru Lach, that a previous door hands it over to later door. But the Bris Kerov was explaining that with the, and this all the comes from the Beis HaLevi, and it's remarkable how a Mesorah in the Beis HaLevi, which apparently he did not share in writing with Rav Geshen and Nachleiner. He shared a different idea. The two are not contradictory. The two are complementary. Where the Beis HaLevi was arguing that in this particular case, the counter Mesorah, but the Beis HaLevi perhaps developed this idea in a different context, and he was sharing it in a different context. There, the Beis HaLevi's Mesorah was that in order to, there are certain parshas in halacha that only are part of halacha if they are received from a previous generation. And if they're not received, then they don't become part of Allah. If they are received either from some common understanding, maybe not from a particular door lador, it could be from just a consensus from one generation to the other. There are other areas of Allah that we can point out. The one that I find matches this well, and it seems to be clear in the Rambam, is when it comes to Tumas Tzeras, that we all can study the Parsha of Tzvi Metzora, and we can study the Mishnayos of the Gom, and we can study the Rambam of the Gom. And the Rambam records in Hilchos Tumas Tzeras that Afal Pisha Kol Kesherin Leros Negoim Hatuma V'Tara Tuluya B'Koyim. That even though anybody can study Negon, and anybody can examine Negon, and anybody can come to a determination of whether something is Tum or Tar, nevertheless, it is only the Koyen who has the license from Halacha to determine and to establish whether something is Tum or not Tum, Tum or Tar. And then the Rambam, towards the end of that Halacha, says that Avolim Hoya Koyen Roy V'Seimech Al Atzmoy Oser lo leros nega mikol negom ad sheyiren rabbi v'yeboki b'chol anigom. That if a koyin is going to view the tzeras on his own, then he's only permitted to examine negom ad sheyiren rabbi. It doesn't say until his rebbe gives him permission to paskin, as we have when it comes to, you have to have a heter hayro in order to paskin, or it comes to the concept of smich. Over here, it's that your rebbe has to teach you these halachas. Ad she yiren a rabbi, v'yevoki b'chol anigom u'mishmoseim b'nigei odom kulam u'b'nigei begodom b'nigei batim. He has to have the whole parasha transmitted over to him from his rebbe in this area. Apparently, it sounds like that a person could become proficient in Hilchos Negom by studying the text. Maybe even proficient, maybe even seeing diagrams and pictures. But until somebody says, this is what the Torah meant by saying white, and this is what the Torah meant by saying a deeper white, Rashi says, they don't understand what it means to have a greater depth. And this is what the Torah said when it means a black hair or a gold hair. So only then does a Koyein have the access to the halacha of, and we could say that it stands to the reason. There are certain things that require seeing them. We have, for example, we have in Parshas Bo, source Yud Beis, source Yud Aleph, is the Tana Rabbi Shmuel, Zol Sachai Yesher Toichlu, Milamei, Shetofas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mikol Min Umin Veher L'Moshe V'Omoloi, Zol Sachom Eloi Zol Teichol. We are familiar with a Ramah. The Ramah is only part of the story, but it gets often quoted. That when it's usually Thanksgiving time, it gets quoted. That the Ramah points out that in order for a bird to be kosher, that's in source number Yud, V'yeshoyim she'ein l'smoch afilu al zeh, v'ein lechol shum oif elo b'mesorah shekimlu boi shu tor. That the Ramah's psak is that when it comes to birds, so we cannot use simonim. There are simonim that the Torah gives us, the Gemara gives us, of what's a kosher bird, is it a kosher bird? So a person could learn these simonim very, very well and then say, I got it, okay? Now I'm going to explain. And most Rishonim said that would be good enough. There is a wide debate as to how to interpret all these simonim, and it could make it very difficult. But if a person finds a bird that is all the simonim, according to all the shitas, so then most Rishonim say, you have a kosher bird. The Ramah says, no, it has to be a bird where I know from a previous generation that this is a kosher bird. It could be a very similar, I don't know if there are, now we have pictures and we have YouTubes and maybe the Ramah would allow that to become part of the Masorah. I don't know. But it certainly stands to reason that based on this Gemara where Kadosh Baruch Hu himself was toifes mi kol min o min, it means that Kadosh Baruch Hu did not leave it up to Moshe Rabbeinu, description, malagera, and the Mephesis Parson, and didn't say Moshe Rabbeinu, if you have any sveikas, oh, you know what to do, a subject day, right, you know what to do. Kadosh Baruch Hu showed kol min o min. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to show kol min o min. So the Beis Levi said, how do you know what a shore is? Because people call it a shore. When do they begin to call it a shore? When Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu. The other area where it's clear when it requires a Mesorah, in order for it to be of significance, the Rambam says, and this the Rav quotes in that shir, is the positioning of the Mizbeach and the place that it has in Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam at great length describes that our Beis HaMikdash, the place that David HaMelech bought from Arnon Yevusi, U'mesoiris at the bottom of number test biyad hakol shamokim shebono by David Shlomo mizbeach begarin begarin who hamokim shebono by Avraham mizbeach for okar of Yitzchak v'mokim shebono by Noach shiyotz min ateva. The Rambam says it's not just based on a allegorical medrash, so to speak. No, there is a mesorah. It was well known that was passed down Noach. And then Yakeda, David HaMelech, Shlomo, Bo'amizbech, Shekrivul of Kain Behevel, goes back to Kain Behevel, goes back to Adam HaRishon. And then the Rambam writes that in Gimel, Midos HaMizbech, the measurements of the Mizbech, Vitzurosa, Yedua, Ish, Me, Ish, U'mizbech, Shebonu, B'nei Agol, Ke'mizbech, Sh'osad, Libonois, Ve'in Losa, Midosi, V'lei Romi, Menem. And then he describes how the Nevi'im, when they came back, they described how the Mizbeach should look. So the Rav pointed out that based on the Beis HaLevi's approach, that there are parshas in Halacha. And that's, I think, I would speculate how the Rav would respond to the tzitzis and to the tefillin. Tzitzis and tefillin may not be a parsha that is part of the Mesorah of Zekeinecho V'yomrelach. Tzitzis and tefillin may be part the machloikis of how many strings, and the seder of the parshas that may be part of the mesora of she'al avicha v'yageidcha, and therefore it can be discussed, and you can bring proofs and you can bring counterproofs, and if your proof is going to be some archaeological dig find, then that's part of the way that halacha can become established. However, Kadosh Baruch Hu determined that there are certain parashas, whether it's the parasha of the identification of various animals, or whether it's the parasha of the identification of Tzaras, and whether it's the parasha of positioning of Mizbeach, then they're not part of a give and take. There's a different kind of Mesorah. there, the halacha is established the way Beis Halevi is said to, or the way the Brisker Rav presents, there's certain things that are mitzias. They are the realities of halacha, and they have to be given over from one generation to the next generation. And that's the my interest in this shir is not to discuss the issues, the ups and downs, the plus and minuses of tchelas, but out of it's more to discuss this tradition, this mesorah of the Beis Halevi, that the Beis Halevi established for us, and that's became the cornerstone of the of this shiur that the Rav gave, that we can find in Shiurim Lamamori, that there are two ways in which halacha gets transmitted, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu determines when a parsha, those two ways became shaped the two ways in which a basin would sometimes establish halachas. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu established already by Matan Torah which parshias of halacha are part of a halacha l'moshe misinai format that have to be transmitted, and which are part of a sha'al avicha v'yegecha format, and those can be discussed, re-established. And that's the one of the important the important parts of the concept of Mesorah in Klal Yisrael. To certain parshas have to be determined, certain parshas of halacha have to be determined only by a zekei necho v'yoymolach. I think it shows the beautiful part of the system, that there are parts of Kadosh Baruch Hu's system which are open to discussion, rediscussion, and certain parts of Kadosh Baruch Hu that are absolutely static, so to speak. And the Beis Halevi would say, to determine certain realities, that is a static part of halacha, where the Mizbeach should be. That's not a conversation, that's a discussion. On the other hand, most of halacha is part of a very, very rich conversation from generation to generation. By having a system which includes those different items, you have those parshias. You have a system which endures from generation to generation because it maintains certain ideas that have always been there from our Sinai, and at the same time invites a rich and robust conversation amongst the various generations. Any comments, insights? Good, so I want to thank you very much for joining us. Our Moshe Tzvi will be giving the next of this series on Friday morning, January 1st. And it'll be in the shul and on Zoom. And that'll be how Kovod HaTorah and Kovod Sefer Torah preserve the concept of Mesorah. And then, Bezer Hashem, Sunday night, we have Ari Lam will be speaking about, Dr. Norman Lam is one of the great defenders of the Mesorah. And then, Bezer Hashem, a week later, we'll be speaking about the Lord, Rabbi Dr. Jonathan Sachs, who was one of the most eloquent. It's hard to say who was more eloquent. I don't know. But Ari Lam is a very eloquent speaker, and I look forward to both of his presentations. So thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Rabbi Neuberger.
Thank you. It's good to see you. Good to see you.
Be seen.